Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 80 of Game On with Cody and John.
Listen up. Our ground game isn't working. We're going to put the ball in the air. If we're going to walk into walls, I want us running into them full speed.
What are you saying?
Or you can start by telling the Hill the president's named his nominees to the FEC. And we're going to lose some of these battles. And we might even lose the White House. But we're not going to be threatened by issues. We're going to put them front and center. We're going to raise the level of public debate in this country. And let that be our legacy. That sound all right to you, Josh?
I serve at the pleasure of the President of the United States.
Yeah?
I serve at the pleasure of the President.
I serve at the pleasure of President Bartlett.
Obie?
I serve at the pleasure of the President.
Good. Let's get in the game.
This is Game On with Cody and John, the uncommon podcast for the common gamer, bringing you the latest and greatest from the world of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, RPGs, and miniatures wargaming, news and discussions on gaming and gamer culture, plus reviews of some of the best games on the market. And now, from the Game On studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, here are Cody Jones and John Richard.
Well, howdy gamers. It is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. It's been a little while.
We've had to have time to mourn.
There's been a long mourning period.
Yes.
Peyton mourning, if you will.
It will. Perhaps it's because the show is ending.
Perhaps.
And he had nothing else to listen to.
Yeah.
Peyton Manning and many others, Dallas Clark, Gary Brackett et al., are leaving the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah.
And Moss.
Now, you may wonder, is there any link between the exodus of all these Colts players and the ending of Game On with Cody and John? I don't know.
I think so.
Maybe so.
I'm going with yes.
We have to just sort of leave it up to you to decide whether that's the case. But anyway, we're back, and you know, we're on our 2 week recording schedule, and then both Cody and I got really sick, the same week, and we weren't able to record. And I threw my back out last week, and so
it's
been one thing after another. But we are back on the mics, and we are in the midst of the final five. Cody, what is the final five?
It is the final five episodes of the show.
Okay, I'm just going to make sure you're still paying attention there.
Yep.
Yeah, the final five episodes of Game On with Cody and John. This is the third of five, and we're still going to be bringing you some great gaming stuff this episode. What are we talking about?
Well, we're going to give you our state of the hobby. You know, we've talked about a lot of gaming topics, and we felt kind of as we're going out, whether you wanted to hear it or not, we're going to give you kind of our feelings on things as we step away.
That's right. It's been 3.5 years-ish of doing this podcast, and
dang,
so we just want to sort of talk about what has happened over the course of these last 3 years in gaming and, you know, where the hobby may be going. And we're also going to give you a review in our By Triad and I. We're going to be talking about a pretty new hotness, right? This came out very end of last year, I think.
Yeah.
And that game is Ninjato, which is
Ninjato
from Z-Man Games, and really a product of two local designers and friends of ours. So, you know, we're looking forward to giving that game some love. And we got the rundown, and we got a contest,
We have our last contest.
The final Game On with Cody and John contest, and I think you're going to like this one, so stay tuned. But as always, we're going to start off with a rundown. You ready?
Let's do it.
Well, it's once again time for the rundown, where we talk about all the games and geekery we've been participating in the last few weeks. But first, as always, we're going to hold off on the penance to Myriad Games, our great sponsor. There's a little fake out there. We're going to be actually giving our due penance to our sponsor, Myriad Games, at the end of the rundown, and there's a specific reason why that you don't want to miss. So stay tuned to the end of the rundown, and that's a little tease there, and we'll have some excitement for you. So let's go ahead and kick off the rundown with Cody. What you been playing?
Well, we both had it was a great time for gaming here in the gaming capital, more so than normal because there were two conventions held on the same weekend in Indianapolis. One was HoosierCon, which we've talked about on the show, and then one was IndieCon, where it's more like a boardroom thing where a bunch of people just come together and it's pretty much all open gaming.
Yeah. Some would say either that was serendipitous or unfortunate that they were both on the same weekend.
I can't say. But okay. John pretty much went to IndieCon most of the time and I went to HoosierCon all the time. So we get two different views on it.
Yeah.
For me, at HoosierCon, I ran two games of Mansions of Madness. I got to break out the fully painted set, so that was nice, and had two good games.
Same
adventure both times. I did not run Fall of House Lynch, number one. Oh, I good. Ran Inner Sanctum, number two.
Okay.
I don't really care for Inner Sanctum that much.
Oh, no.
Now, it's... I think it's too easy for the investigators, really. I don't know. But I did have one thing in my second game. I had basically the end condition for the investigators was they had to kill a certain creature in four rounds or they lost. And so with this creature were a few cultists, and the cult leader, when he was making an attack, he did his special attack. So I looked on the bottom, and either result involved a fire token going into the room. So basically this fire token was just chipping away at the monster they were supposed to kill.
Oh.
So they kind of got helped out a little bit by the fire, but it still took them all four rounds to do it. I still really like that game. Setup time is still the killer. I mean, it's still 20.
That's a shame.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fast at it. It's 20 minutes every time. Although I am doing the tokens instead of the cards in each of the rooms, and that's a lot better. I think that really makes it more of a mystery of where the investigators need to go. Because they don't.
Tell me about that again. Tokens?
Yeah, so in Mansions of Madness, you set up the mansion or the map, however. And then you put the packs of cards in each room, right?
Right,
As the book tells you to. In this, I have a little, it's like a little bead or something I put in each room. And then before the game starts, I take all the cards that are going to go in there, and I divide the ones that are seated, which are, you know, that are in specific rooms for the story, and I put those all in one pile, and then everything else, which will just come up, you know, in the non-important rooms, I put those in another pile. And so whenever they explore a room, I just look at the investigator guide and I see, oh, they're in the hallway 3, and then I just look and then I take out the cards individually for hallway 3 and say, you find this, and then you find this.
Oh okay. So wouldn't that help setup time?
It does a little bit, but it's still, I mean, the time you would spend putting the stacks and organizing them and putting them there, you're spending that time dividing them into if they're random cards or if they're seated cards.
Oh, I see.
But I think it's better for gameplay because it makes the story a little harder to figure out because the clues are kind of hit you over the head easy.
Yeah.
And normally you can kind of look on the board and you can see, you know, oh, there's a lock card and four other cards underneath that. I bet we're going to have to go there at some point. So I'll, you know, send a guy over there.
Oh, that's a good idea.
This one, there's just a bead in every space.
Yeah, it gives you a little bit of unknown element.
You have to keep an eye on which ones are locked, though. Mm-hmm. And I turn the bead upside down and I hope no one notices because that tells me that, oh, that one's locked.
Ooh.
And they can't just walk
you
in.
You just gave away one of your trade secrets there.
I did. To the six people still listening.
Welcome.
Howdy. So a few other games that I played while I was there, not necessarily in order. I played Innovation. I won my first game of Innovation in tries.
Legit?
Legitimately, yes.
Remember that game a few months ago?
That was not called at the time, like pro wrestling. If it was not seen at the time, it was fine.
That's fine.
No, I won a pretty runaway game of it on my own and by the correct rules. But I find the more I play it, the less I like it.
Why is that?
I don't know. It's just, I know it and Glory to Rome have very little in common, but for like my thinky card game itch, my thinky card game bucket, if you will, I'll go Glory to Rome. I like that a lot more, and Innovation just seems, it always seems like a runaway. Like, I've not played many close games of Innovation, and maybe that's just the games I've played, but.
Well, I think that in that game, more than in Glory to Rome, you can get that one card that if someone can activate a really powerful ability multiple turns in a row, then it's really hard to come back.
Yeah, and that's how I won.
Like Gunpowder, I think, is one of the cards. It's just like, it just kills you once someone gets that, because there's very little ways to combat that.
Yeah, I mean, I had a combo, and I was doing it two times a turn, about three turns in a row. And, you know, it's just, I was getting all these cards and scoring and achieving. And it was, I mean, I guess the game's kind of built that way.
Yeah.
You know, you find a combo and then abuse it as long as you can until the other people catch up. But
right.
It was okay.
Well, I mean, the balance element in those kind of games, though, is that if you do find a combo like that, that there's, you know, a lot of other games that you can only, you know, you're only going to be able to do combo X for about two turns, and then you're going to get crushed. But sometimes if you get a bad draw of cards, it just goes on forever.
Yeah, so innovation not really sticking with me.
Okay.
Two games that really did stick with me. The first was Ascending Empires. And
That's like is it like a dexterity game?
Yeah, so it's like, it's kind of a mix of like a 4X space game and flicking.
Oh,
and my
two
buddy,
of your favorite things.
Yes, and yeah. And my you know, our buddy Sam had been really wanting me to play this. He's like, you got to try this out. And I was looking forward to it, I guess. I didn't have real high hopes. I just didn't think it'd be that good. I was like, oh, okay, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
And I found it to be a really interesting game. Mm-hmm. Now, in the game we played, Sam replaced the smaller ships, the little wooden discs with glass beads.
Okay.
And those worked really well. Those slid a lot better. But this was actually a really nice kind of light 4X game. Kaylin really liked it because, you know, she doesn't really want to play even Eclipse or TI or anything like that, cause it's just kind of heavy 4X, you know, she doesn't
long
want,
involved,
yeah, yeah, she doesn't want that much of a game. This is a nice light game where, the flicking was not as important to it as I thought. Like if you are a really good flicker and you're really good at dexterity games, it will help you a little bit, but you will not necessarily win.
Oh, okay.
At its heart, it's still a 4X game with a flicking element, where I thought it was the reverse. I thought it was purely a flicking game, you know, kind of like Catacombs that had some stuff tacked onto it.
Oh, okay.
So give that one a try.
Okay.
I really like that one. The other one Sam brought was Winner's Circle, which is the horse racing game. It was a Reiner Knizia joint, I believe.
Ooh.
And this one I didn't have high hopes for because I typically don't like Knizia games.
Right.
This one I really, really liked. And it's out of print, naturally.
Oh, so too heavily themed, those games, right?
It's just too much theme.
Too much theme.
No. This one was good. It was kind of like Longshot with a little bit added on.
Oh, okay.
I like Longshot. I'm with you. I think it sometimes goes on about 15 minutes too long.
Yeah.
This one felt good. It was enough to where you could still play it with non-gamers, I think. You could still, you know, have mom, pa, and grandma play it and understand for the most part what was going on. But it felt a little meatier than Longshot. So I'd like to find a copy of this. It is out of print. So I'll see what my chances are. But I really like that one.
Cool. Winner Circle. All right.
What else did I play? I did get a game of War Machine in. We've kind of started our weekly War Machine League here. That one, I think I have to read upon the rules more because I just feel like games devolve into, my guy does this awesome thing, and then my guy does this awesome thing. It's like, okay.
But we've never been really good in our games of War Machine at all of the power attacks.
No.
Like the picking up and throwing Warjacks and the one-arm lock and, you know, the pushing and all that kind of stuff. I just always forget about those things, being able to do those things. It always ends up being round after round of, I hit you in the face. I hit you in the face again. I hit you with my sword.
You know what it makes me want to play, which is funny? HeroScape.
Oh, yeah?
You know, it's like when you get screwed over by kind of a stupid line of sight rule, it's like, you know what I miss? When you just bend down and you're like, I can see your guy.
Yeah. Roll the dice.
Yeah.
My kids were actually playing with all my HeroScape stuff over the weekend. They just, Ethan just said, oh, you know, can I play with your HeroScape figures? Oh, sure. And then they wanted to play with the map tile. So I just got my big bucket out and they built, my two kids built this giant map and they were just, no game. They were just, you know, playing and, you know, kind of role playing and everything, but that was pretty cool. It made me kind of want to play it again.
Yeah. I mean, it's,
we're talking about setup time.
Yeah. That's still my one thing with that game is the setup time. Like if there's just a quick way to do it without leaving a map set up at all times.
Yeah. I'm still glad that I bought all the stuff that I did because you know, I still actually have two booster packs that are unopened. They're the same booster pack. I think I got them like $2 a piece or something. Yeah. So I bought a bunch of extra ones.
You should give me one.
And yeah, you can have one, but yeah, maybe we'll throw that in with our contest. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just toss things at people.
So. Anything else I play?
What else at HoosierCon? Did you do any RPGs at HoosierCon this year?
I did not, actually. It was actually pretty light HoosierCon for me. I didn't really schedule all that much.
Huh.
Yeah, I think that was the gist of it there. At the game night, I did the last game on game night, got a chance to play Modern Art.
Oh.
I'm terrible at that game, but
another
I
enjoy fine
it.
Reiner Knizia
another joint. Reiner Knizia joint, yeah. It was just a pure auction game, but I really like it, but I get too much into the auctions. So I end up, it's like I spend all my money to get the really good stuff, and I get good payouts, but I'm not keeping anything back.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, everyone thought in the game I had won. Everyone thought I'd stomped them just because my payouts had been so big. But, you know, I was a paper tiger. I had like $3,000 behind the screen. Wow. You know, it was like I had no money left.
Yeah, yeah.
So played that. Got to play Tok Tok Woodman finally.
Uh-huh.
I really like that one.
Okay.
The little dexterity game, kind of like Jenga, but from Korea, and it's with an axe.
Very. You can have my copy. I'm just going to give it to you.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Bold move here on live on the show.
Live on the show.
No takey backsies.
It's recorded now.
Fantastic. I'll
bring that next time.
I will take
it. Well,
you
just look like you're having so much fun playing it that, you know.
It's good.
It's sat on my shelf for a while. It's a cute game, but I don't have like the reprinted American version, so the rules are in like really poorly translated Korean.
Oh, those are the best kind.
So you have to figure out the rules in your own.
I mean, it's still the same.
It's the same.
Components,
like
right?
Oh, yeah, the pieces are all the same. But
fine. It's not a complex game.
All right, that's true.
I think that was it. Our buddy Dare did set a new Tumble and Dice board record of 219.
What is the max you can get in that game? Is
whatever 96 times 4 is.
I don't know. 400 something? I don't know.
Yeah,
close to 400.
396, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's right.
386, maybe?
Hell, I don't know.
Math on.
I was told there'd be no math.
That's
but 219 or whatever it was that Dare said.
Impressive.
That's a ridiculous thing. That may stand for a while. So kudos to Dare. That's all I got on the games front.
Okay. Well, like Cody said, I went to IndieCon while he went to HoosierCon. I actually did go to HoosierCon very briefly. And that was... I feel kind of bad about how that all went down. A lot of my...
Here we go.
Well, a lot of... Most of my... I have more friends that go to HoosierCon and folks that are, they're like Gen Con folks who come in from out of town. That's really sort of how HoosierCon got started was it was originally a group of sort of Gen Con fans that lived in Indianapolis that formed a small convention that eventually grew and then it sort of split off into its own thing to make this convention. So now it's just a great overall Indiana thing, bringing Indiana gamers together. Hoosier gamers, if you will.
I will.
Okay. And so I get a lot of friends that come into town for that. So I was torn between that and then the fact that IndieCon is a smaller convention that's just, like Cody said, just sort of open gaming. If you can sort of think of like BGG Con, but 150 people. And I just really like that kind of gaming. And so I felt like I could get more gaming in doing games that I liked. And, you know, and I figured I would see a lot of those folks at Gen Con that I normally see at HoosierCon. So any listeners who are friends of mine from HoosierCon, I'm sorry that I maybe didn't get to hang out as much with you. I'm just going to go ahead and issue that apology. I'm sorry.
But like you said, you slummed with us down at HoosierCon for one game.
It says slummed. It's not the case. But I did come down because, and this is the saddest thing. I said all that just to say, I came down to HoosierCon for about a half a day on Saturday. And what did I do? I played a two-player game of Through the Ages with Cody.
Yep.
Something that we could have done anytime at, you know, any of our places.
But in a way, I think it would be harder for us to schedule a time and me call you up and say, hey, come down for 3-4 hours. We're going to play Through the Ages. This was like, it was set up.
And it was nice to be in that sort of con environment. And it was cool because a lot of our friends did come up and were talking to us and sitting with us. And that's a game where you can be talking to people. And, you know, and it was just a game we don't get to the table very much. We've, you know, said before it's the number one game on our list, at least for this past year. And we had a great time playing. And I think Cody won by a good bit.
Yeah.
He just got ahead of me and I wasn't able to. The military thing kind of killed me on that game, but still lived through the ages. As far as IndieCon goes, I've got to play a lot of stuff. I started out on a Friday afternoon. I took a little bit of time off of work and let's see what I played. I got the list here. Played Castles of Burgundy again. I played that
you
game.
You love that game.
I really do. And I was game sharing it for Myriad and I was going to send it back because I was like, maybe something else. But I played it so many times now and I really enjoy it. And now I have several folks like in our game group that really like it too. So I'm keeping it. I found that it is a fantastic two-player game. It is really, really good. And, you know, adding or subtracting players from the game, I mean, it can add to it because more the merrier. It just adds time. I ended up playing a four-player game of this at our game night recently, and that game went a good, I think it took 2 to 2.5 hours. It was a very enjoyable time, but just with four players, it just adds on time. I mean, it's probably a 30-minute per player game. Maybe a little bit less if everyone knows the rules real well. But I really do enjoy that one quite a bit. So I played a two-player game of that with a new friend named Alan. And then we grabbed one other person. He taught me how to play San Juan, which is the game that I, the way I understand it, it's the game that Race for the Galaxy is sort of based upon. That San Juan is a card game version of Puerto Rico. And so it's got the same sort of role selection mechanics and you're building things and that kind of stuff. But then I think Race for the Galaxy, they sort of took San Juan to another level with that and gave it the space theme and all that kind of stuff. So I liked it okay. I found that it was one of those games that it's really hard if you don't know what all the cards do. It's hard to know what's coming up, and so it's sort of hard to plan a strategy out. The game sort of the cards sort of flow in and out of your hands so quickly because you have to discard them at certain times. You can only have a certain number in your hand at any given time, so it's really hard to know what to keep and what to go ahead and let go of. So that was the tricky part of it for me, and I lost pretty badly in that game. But I was glad I got a chance to try it. Played two games of Seven Wonders, which hasn't really come to the table amongst our friends very much lately.
No.
But I really still enjoy that game and played both games with the Leaders expansion, which I'd only done that one time before and found that I really did enjoy it.
So you like Leaders as a whole?
I do. I think it adds some pretty interesting things to the game. I think it's relatively well balanced. The problem is that unless everybody knows all the leaders, you're passing around the book to figure, because the iconography on it, not great.
Mm-hmm.
But they do such varied things that it was hard, I'm sure, to put some icons together that made sense. But I find it didn't detract from the game, and, you know, probably added a little bit to it. So still, you know, really enjoy Seven Wonders.
I might need to play with Leaders more. I've only played with it a handful of times, but I think I still just prefer the base game for that. I don't know.
Yeah,
like you said, unless you play with a group that regularly play Seven Wonders.
Yeah, and I could kind of take it or leave it. It was fine. There's actually a new expansion to Seven Wonders coming out in May, I believe, called Cities. I have no idea what that's all about, but it looks like it's going to be the same sort of size box as Leaders. So, you know how I feel about expansions. Not a huge fan, so we'll see what that looks like. Played some King of Tokyo. That's a good filler.
Yeah,
played a fun game of that.
I'm waiting for that to be reprinted.
Is that out of print right now?
Yeah. Well, okay. The new version is going to have like indented dice and everything.
Oh, still going to have the cardboard standees probably?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's always the rub with that's how I'm feeling about Eclipse right now, because you keep hearing these things like the second editions, it's going to fix that and it's going to have this new thing. And it's almost like, you know, if you bought it early, it's like the good thing was you got to play it while everyone else was waiting for the reprint. The bad thing is you're going to have a shoddier product.
Yeah, exactly.
When it comes back. But oh, well.
So I played that game of King of Tokyo because we were sort of waiting to get all of our group together to play a four-player game of Eclipse.
There you go.
Which is what we did in the evening. We didn't get started until about 8:30, and then the game finished a little bit before midnight.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, and that was with two players who had never played before. And
that's really good.
Yeah, and actually I taught the rules, and I thought I did an okay job, remarkably. I played with Adam and David and Adam West.
Adam West.
Yes. Not Batman, but still a stand-up guy. Played a great...
Not Batman, but still a stand-up guy.
If you can't be Batman, you know, at least be a stand-up guy. So we played a great four-player game of Eclipse, and I think I did not win. I think I came in second place.
You told me it was real close.
It was great because it was the way that the tiles ended up getting laid in that game. One player, Adam, he ended up... he was pretty much cut off. Like, the only way he could get to any other part of the board was to go through the center. Otherwise, he didn't have the wormholes that he needed to be able to get around the side. So he had no choice but to kind of build up his army and push towards the center. At the same time, I was doing that. And then David, he was doing that too. And this is the first game that I played that utilized a whole lot of plasma missiles. And I think that the idea that a lot of the other players had was, forget about defense. I just want to be able to go in with as much firepower as possible and roll the dice and hopefully wipe everything out so then they don't have a chance to shoot me.
The old right? glass cannon strategy.
Yeah, but it really worked. And, I mean, those plasma missiles, they don't take any energy to put them on your ship. And so, you know, I want to say that there was one set of ships that one of the guys put in there where he was rolling like 28 dice.
Oh, my.
and then I think he hit on like a 4+ or something like that. So it was pretty fun to watch.
So if anything is left standing, like if all you have is missiles and you leave anything standing, do you just fast forward and assume that any ship you have left is destroyed?
Yeah, and that's sort of how the last turn worked with me, because I one of those ships with all the plasma missiles showed up in a hex that had one of my star bases in it. And so knowing that this was going to happen, and I didn't have any extra energy to put a better gun on my star base, I bought a whole bunch of improved hulls, which gave me extra hit points. So I think I had a total of like 8 hit points on my star base. And so the interceptor swooped in with all the plasma missiles. He rolled a bazillion dice, and he got, I think I had 7 hit points, something like that. He got 6, but it wasn't enough to kill me. So what we sort of said was, well, now given infinite rounds of battle, I'll continue to roll this one yellow die, and I only needed one hit to be able to kill him.
I guess he could retreat.
He couldn't retreat because he had actually come through the center. And he had left ships behind so that they could battle with the... And so then he was basically stuck. He had no other place to go.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, so we just sort of, you know, so I was able to destroy a ship there. A lot of fun. Still really loving Eclipse. So did that on Friday night. Saturday, played the game of Through the Ages with Cody, and then went back to IndieCon for the afternoon. What?
He had an afternoon hors d'oeuvres or some caviar in the evening.
My goodness. And the reason I wanted to get back in the afternoon was because they were doing their raffles. IndieCon has a lot of good prize support, and they what they do is they get companies to send in games, and they have this whole huge table of games. And when you come in and you get your badge, you're given a few of these little red tickets, and you write your name on them, and then each game that's on the table has an envelope that corresponds to it. And so you just sort of can decide which games do you want to go for in the raffle, and you throw your ticket or tickets into the envelope. Then when the raffle time comes, they basically stop everybody and they read off the names and they pull tickets out of the bag. There were actually some games, I think a good handful of them, where no one had put any tickets in. So one of the strategies you could have done is like wait until 1:59, then go and just look through all the envelopes and see which ones didn't have tickets in them and drop them in there and get games. But what they ended up doing with those is they took all of the tickets that didn't win from previous ones and they tossed them all into a box.
Okay.
And then when they had the stack of leftover games, and they pulled from there. So I ended up winning 2 things at the raffle, which was cool. I didn't really win anything the year before, but I won... Well, as sort of the consolation prize, because I didn't put my ticket into a envelope for this one, is I won the game Darjeeling.
Ooh.
It's a Euro game that's
about... No!
Yeah, it's about tea or something.
Yeah, probably about tea.
Yeah. I'll give it a shot. I haven't opened it up yet. And then I also put my... quite a few tickets into the envelope to win a copy of Skylanders, which is the new... It's a video game with sort of a toy element to it for all the different platforms, Xbox, PS3, and Wii, and got that for my kids. It's a really cool thing. Do you mind if I expound on it a second here? Because I think it's a really neat technology, especially if you have kids and are like video games at all. It's just sort of a 3D platformer, kind of like Super Mario Galaxy or whatever. But the idea is that you have these little figures, little toys, and you have this thing called the Portal of Power, which is a little plastic sort of a platform that you hook in USB style to your
Has a Portal of Power?
What's that?
Talisman.
Oh, yeah, they do.
That's all I got.
Thanks for that. So it interacts with these different figures. So when you turn the game on, it'll ask you, put one of your Skylanders onto the Portal of Power. And so you pick which little character you want and you drop him on there. It doesn't really even connect. There's no, you don't plug him in or anything. You just set it on top of this little plastic platform, and the portal reads it, and then immediately your little character pops up on the screen. Now that would be kind of a fun little interactive thing to begin with, but the really cool thing is that if you're playing with this character and then you get upgrades, like you can can get hats that will give you different abilities, and you get different. You can level up and, you know, advance your character. All of that information is stored inside the little toy, inside the figure itself. So you could literally take the figure to someone else's house who has the game, drop it on their portal of power, and you can play your character in the game, in their game. And so I think that's really fun. There's also there's sort of a collectible element to these toys. They're about $9 a piece for these little figures, and they have they're associated with different elements. And so you might be walking around in the game, and it'll say, you know, magic characters of the magic element are stronger in this area. So if you're in the middle of playing and you're like, oh, magic element, well, I've got a magic dragon, you can swap out your Skylanders, and it's real easy. Once you pull the thing off the portal, it immediately comes up with a screen saying, you know, place another one onto the portal, and you drop one on there, and it, you know, boom, you're right back into the game. So I was really impressed. I thought it was going to be cute, but I also thought it was going to be really gimmicky and, you know, not that engaging as far as the gameplay goes, but I think it's really a lot of fun. My son really loves playing, and I've actually enjoyed playing the co-op with him. You can play two players at a time. You just drop two of those little characters onto the portal, and two people can play. So if you have kids, especially if you like, you know, 3D kind of platformer games like that, and this little, you know, collectible toy element is fun too, I would highly recommend Skylanders. All right, enough of that little plug.
You know, we were talking about this earlier. It's kind of like, we were like, imagine if we had that when we were kids.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we're going to be like, our kids and our kids' kids are going to be like,
our grandkids are going to look back and say, Skylanders, remember how that, remember Zork? That was cool, you know? Zork was cool. But all right, so other games that I played at IndieCon, I played a game of Survive. Always a fun time doing that. We just played the base game without any expansions or anything. Enjoyed that one. Played Witch's Brew.
That's a good one.
I enjoyed that one. That one did not land as well. This is the first time I played that where it didn't land quite as well. And I think the problem is that we had, of our four players, there was one guy who, this is the same guy who taught me how to play San Juan.
Mm-hmm.
I can just tell in talking to him that he's got a, you know, a real sharp mind for games. And so this game, which has sort of the feel of, you know, it's sort of a take that gotcha fun sort of game. I am the snake handler. No, I'm the snake handler. You know, he was really thinking about this very, very closely and the order that he wanted to do things. So he really turned it into a much deeper game than it should have been, I think. And he beat us by a bazillion points. I mean, he won by a ton, but I think it sort of slowed down the game. No offense to him. He was playing his game, and that's great. But I'm used to that game being just a lot quicker and just, you know, just play the cards real quickly and don't worry so much about the order of things. But do enjoy that one. Let's see. Played Kingdom Builder. I talked about that one a few episodes ago. Listen.
What? Oh, sorry.
It's a fine game.
It's fine.
It's a fine game. Really good two-player game. I mentioned that about Castles of Burgundy. Good two-player game, and it's quick, too. And so you can set the boards up. You can, you know, play out your kingdom cards. You do a different strategy every game. And it takes, you know, less than half an hour to play. And then if, you know, you can set it up again with a whole different set of conditions. So
or not.
It was a fine game.
It was fine.
Yeah. Okay, so then got some dinner, and then into the evening hours, IndieCon After Dark, got a couple of guys together, and we played a full game of Sid Meier's Civilization with the Fame and Fortune expansion.
Oh, okay. I don't think I heard about this.
Oh, no, yeah. We played the full three-player game, and I really liked the expansion. I'm in general not a big fan of expansions, but I thought this one did some really good things. One thing that's very cool is that one of the criticisms of the original Civ game was that the people have said that the economic victory of getting coins, too easy. You know, too easy to go for that because you can just get techs that do that. If you happen to get the right great people around your city, that's going to give you coins. And it's just too easy to get those 15 coins. Well, what they did to sort of make the economic track a little less attractive is they allow you to use your coins now to do different things. So you can use them to invest into particular areas. And so every turn, if you have a coin, you can choose to invest that in a particular area. In which case, once you've gotten a certain number of coins, you can start getting bonuses. So, you know, for example, you might have an investment where once you've invested three coins, it'll allow you to go farther on the culture track, or it'll allow the culture track to be easier, or it'll allow tech. You can start learning technology quicker. So it's things that will help you with other possible victory tracks in the game. So that makes for an interesting set of decisions. If you were going for the economic victory, you know, do you really want to do that, or do you want to invest for that? They also had things where you could You could take your city, your main capital. You could turn it into a metropolis, which is two tiles big. And so that was an additional technology that you could do to do that. It makes your capital basically more powerful and more difficult to destroy. There's also some different races. We only played with one new race, the Greeks, which just have some special abilities and, you know, some good things that they added into that. So there's a couple of other elements that got added into the game, but I did not find it to be distracting. A lot of expansions, I think, become distracting because you're trying to remember how to, you know, what's this supposed to do? And I don't remember how this is supposed to fit in. All this stuff seemed to sink right into the game very easily. And I just didn't really feel like there was anything that was too difficult. One other thing is that on the board, the map tiles, there are new map tiles that it came with that have these sort of natural wonders already built into the board. And if you discover those, then you get special abilities and bonuses and that kind of stuff. So really enjoyed that. I lost, but it was a really epic game because I was going for the economic victory. I was about 3 coins away from doing it. Brian was going for the culture victory. He was about more than 2/3 of the way down the culture track. And then David, who ended up winning, he was going for what looked like a tech victory, because we were looking and seeing that on this particular turn, he was going to get the spaceflight tech and be the winner. But he also had enough military power that instead of just waiting until the end of the turn and winning, he went and destroyed Brian's capital and got the military victory. So we got to see all 4 victory conditions, you know, kind of manifest there. Really still enjoy this game quite a bit. I'm glad I got to play a full game of it. And followed that up with a game of Ninjato, which we're going to talk about in our review. So that was IndieCon for me. Game night, like I said, we played a 4-player game of Castles of Burgundy and wrapped up the game night with a game of The Resistance, which always a lot of fun.
You know, I didn't mention that. I might have to retire from The Resistance because I had never before seen clarity in the 2 games we played.
It was pretty cool.
Man, yeah. I called out the spies. I called out exactly what they were doing, and I will never be able to do that again.
Yeah, those are good games. Yeah, that was very satisfying to see that. And I was on your team both times.
Resistance ho.
So that was games. Any other geekery you've been participating in? Any books, movies, video games, stuff of that nature?
You
technology?
Know, not really, except for we are both going to be proud papas of an iPad 3 here soon.
So excited. Woo!
Everyone's like, yeah, okay.
Well, I sold about 25 board games.
You did.
To raise the money to get a new iPad.
This guy was wheeling and dealing at the Game On game night. Everything must go.
I felt like a drug dealer because I had sort of set everything up ahead of time. You know, I sent a list out to our game group of, hey, I'm selling these games and here's how much. And so I worked out these deals ahead of time, and I show up and I open the door to my car and there's like 3 guys waiting there with cash in their hands, you know.
Like, you got the stuff.
I got the stuff, yeah. So many thanks to all the folks at the Game On game night who helped to fund my iPad. So thank you. Looking forward to getting that.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
That's all I've got.
All right. I do want to mention, as far as books and stuff goes, I've been reading, or via audiobook or listening to, the first 2 books of a series called the Codex Alera. This is, I think I've mentioned many times how much I enjoyed the Dresden Files series. The Codex Alera is a fantasy series that Jim Butcher wrote. It's a 6-book series, and I'm in the middle of the 2nd book. And I really, really like it. The concept of it is very funny, I guess kind of funny, because I guess as the story goes, Jim Butcher got challenged to create a good story out of a bad theme. And I think whoever was challenging him, Jim Butcher just said, well, give me 2 bad themes and I'll combine them together. And the 2 themes were the idea of lost Roman legions and Pokemon. And so he was able to, amazingly enough, synthesize these 2 things together into a series called the Codex Alera. And first book's called Furies of Calderon. And the one I'm in right now is, the 2nd book is called Academ's Fury. And I think it's really, really good so far. I don't know if I would get a different experience from actually reading it on the page. I am listening to the audiobooks. And the lady who reads them is great. She's got a... she sounds like an older British lady, but she's got all these great voices, and they're so distinct that you can really tell when she goes into a certain voice exactly who she's portraying. So, and as far as I know, I think she's the reader for the narrator for all 6 of the books. So I'm looking forward to listening to all of those. So if you liked Dresden, don't look for this to be like Dresden, because it's written completely differently. Like if I didn't know that it was the same author, I would not have guessed that it was the same person who wrote them. But it is a very rich story and well written, and I'd recommend it. That's all I got.
All right, it is time to announce the skinny, as it were, for our last contest.
Big contest. The last hoorah.
You know, we're nothing if not self-serving here at the Game Off, Cody and John. So
that's right.
The idea is we want you to send us via an email to the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
I tried to trip you up. That was an early mention. I got it. Nice job. Or call the Game On hotline.
It's 4138-GAME-ON.
Look at this guy. And give us your favorite moment of Game On with Cody and John, the moment that just warmed your heart and tickled your soul. As it were.
We'll even allow you to say that it was the moment that we said we were going to stop producing the show.
Ouch. So that's fine. So we're going to take all those entries and randomly pick one because, and this is a great penance we're about to give to our great sponsor, Myriad Games, who sponsors Game On with Cody and John on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere.
Everywhere. Even where Peyton Manning's going to end up.
Yeah. But, you know, we've been, Myriad does a very generous sponsorship, and we've been saving our pennies, and we have a great offer for you. If you're the winner of this contest, you will receive a $200 gift certificate to Myriad Games, and they will ship your game anywhere.
$200?
$200.
That's huge.
You could buy two copies of
$100 game.
What's $100 game?
Eclipse. When Eclipse comes back. Yeah, right?
buy a travel copy and buy one for the home.
Exactly.
Or buy 20 copies of Flux. You know, whatever you want to do.
That's right. However you want to whatever you medicate need to yourself. Go ahead.
So for $200, enter today. Send us your favorite moment. We're kind of cobbling together our clip show because that's how all great shows end.
That's right.
It's a clip show. So send us either by email or by voicemail your favorite moment of the show, because we're kind of curious. We've had people come up and say, oh, we've loved when you did this or did that. So we're curious to see these entries. We're not just all putting them in a trash can and then we're going to pick from there.
You're a faithful editor here. I'll even go back and cull through all the episodes and we might play that moment if, you know, replay it.
So. Hey, I don't have to do the work, so I like that. So send us or phone us your favorite moments today and you too could win 200 smackaroos. That's 2 Benjamin Franklins. That's 10 Andrew Jacksons.
That's 100 George Washingtons.
100 George Washingtons.
How many Dan Yerringtons is that?
1.
All right.
You're listening to Game On with Cody and John, where Jones Theory compliance is a way of life.
Time for the big deal, friends and gamers. And we're going to be talking today about the state of the hobby. We're going to give you kind of our thoughts on what we think has happened in the gaming industry since we've been doing this whole thing and where we think things are going, because we just like to state our opinions.
Apparently a couple people care.
That's kind of what this whole thing's about. So I figure the way we can sort of frame this conversation is just to go through the different genres of games, right? And just sort of talk about, what's transpired over the last few years. You know, we've seen a lot of things from the perspective of just regular common gamers as podcasters and, you know, all nano celebrities. And, you know, just want to sort of give an idea of where we think things are going.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's start with board games. Why not start with board games?
Let's do it.
Since that's kind of the main thing that we talk about. What have you seen, Cody, as far as board gaming trends and things that have come up over the last few years that have been interesting to you?
Well, I think we can sum it up in... I'll sum it up in two words.
Go ahead.
The first one I would say is volume. Uh-huh. I think just in the time we've been podcasting, the volume of new games coming out every month has been just more and more and more. At least that's how it appears to me. Mm-hmm. And I think the second word I want to mention is Kickstarter. Okay. And or crowdsourcing or however you want to call it. This has kind of been the elephant in the room, I think, and this is just in the past year or so, you know, yeah. With Alien Frontiers, which we got in the ground floor on, I'm proud to say.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we championed that horse.
Sure.
That was a mixed metaphor there.
And yeah, well, we can talk about this in a second, but if every Kickstarter game was like Alien Frontiers, that would be awesome.
Life would be grand.
Yep.
But every game is not Mark Alien Frontiers.
Let's go back to the first one, Volume.
Okay, yes.
So, yeah, so it just sort of seems like over the, we've talked about the board game renaissance since, you know, 1995 is always considered to be sort of a benchmark year for gaming. That's the year that the Settlers of Catan was released and came over into the United States. Settlers is really what opened the door to a lot of Euro style and hobby, what we call hobby designer board games, making it over to the United States.
I mean, that would be a culture shock, really, if you think about it at the time. Yeah. I mean, that coming over and, you know, yeah, you had Ameritrash board games at the time, and but, you know, this was kind of ushered in the new elegant era of board games.
Yeah, yeah, and it just really took things by storm. And so, you know, and today I think Catan is really viewed in the way that I think even things like chess are viewed. There's, you know, folks that are sort of unigamers. They only play one game, and a lot of them, they only play Catan. I have a friend of mine at church that he gets together with his friends on a weekly basis, and that's all they play is Catan. Hmm. And
you know, I have to stick up for Catan a little bit. You know, we poke fun at it because it seems that a lot of the time that's all Mayfair really. They're like, I mean, they're going to milk that cash cow. I cannot blame them.
Catan edition.
Right. But it kind of gets passed over by so many people because for some reason they think that it's so popular that they're not going to bother to play it. Like, I have a hard time getting people together to play Catan. I actually really like it. But everyone's like, no, Catan. I mean, that's so, it's so pedestrian, you know. But
it's the monopoly of the 90s.
Yeah.
It is. And I think 20, 30 years from now, that's the way it's going to be viewed by gamers, you know. And I think the average big box person may look at Settlers of Catan the way that we look at Monopoly now. And, oh, Settlers, you know. But I think for the hardcore gamers, we're going to look at that like, you know, Settlers.
And you know, Monopoly's not
there's
that
so
bad.
Many
but Monopoly so many, not that bad either.
I know.
Play by straight up. But yeah. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
All right. So yeah, so that was a big year of gaming was 1995. And then, you know, I think that in the time that we've been doing this show, I think 2008 was a big year simply because of the release of Dominion.
Yes.
That, you know, the deck building game revolution of the last 3 years has been, well, it's been noticeable. I'm not sure if you could say it's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's definitely been noticeable.
Yeah. It's, you know, I almost want to say it's been a bad thing. Yeah, Dominion was good. I think Dominion continues to be good. Maybe a little overexpanded at this point.
Yeah,
I mean, I think it's just kind of getting beat to death. Right. But I think you saw so many people rush in because, you know, when we played Dominion for the first time, I remember when you taught it to me, I was sitting probably right about here when you taught it to me. And it's just that moment halfway through that we always talk about where you look at me like, wow, this is a different mechanic. You know, love it or hate it, it was revolutionary.
Yeah.
And I think more of the stuff that followed was bad than good. I think even some of the other good deck builders, we still pass off as like, oh, it's good. It's okay. You know, it's kind of like they fall in the Thunderstone camp of utter crap or, you know, pretty good, but most of them fall kind of in between.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, nothing. I don't think anything out there has really stepped up and said, yes, this is on all counts better than Dominion.
Right. And I think that is the way any sort of new mechanic tends to go. And there's only been a few moments like that in gaming, I think, you know, in the last, you know, 15, 20 years. When Magic the Gathering was released in 1993, that was a moment, you know. Mm-hmm. That was where there's never been a game like this before, you know. And so now there's so many other games that have come out, and only collectible card games, and only a few of them have hit even close to what Magic hit. You know, I would say, in general, you've got Yu-Gi-Oh! I think that hit big with a particular audience. Pokemon hit very big, you know, and it still, I think, has quite a bit of a following. And to a less extent, Legend of the Five Rings, and to a much lesser extent, things like the Star Wars collectible card game that was around for a few years. But in general, you go to Gen Con every year, and there's always half a dozen brand new collectible card games, you know, the Big Bang Theory collectible card game, the Simpsons collectible card, you know, whatever. You know.
Now, aren't you the proud owner of the 24 collectible card game?
I still have the starter pack from that. Yeah, that's staying in my collection forever.
but it's funny if you use that example, the example of Magic, not 24.
Yeah.
You know, even the ones we say were very successful CCGs maybe do 1/10 of the business Magic does.
Yeah.
Maybe like 1/8.
Yeah.
But we're like, man, they, you know, in the world of Magic, they really stuck in there and then they made some money.
Right. It's like in the world of miniatures games, you've got Warhammer Fantasy, 40K, And then War Machine was really, you know, one that's come along in the last, you know, less than 10 years. It's almost about 10 years now.
Yeah.
That sort of took things by storm and, you know, and started to have a much larger following. But there's only been just a few of those things that tend to hit like that. So, you know, it's either a new mechanic or a new world or something like that that people tend to latch onto. I really feel like deck building was that, you know, in our little micro era here of our podcast, that was one of the, I think, the big things. And then you end up with a lot of Me Too, you know, after that. But I'll agree with you that it seems like there was a just a huge volume increase in the last few years, to the point where I mean, the way they're able to produce games these days, you know, the quality of components, I think, is has never been better, right? And the quality of artwork and that kind of stuff. But I almost feel that I've been sucked in a lot of times by the fact that there's so many good games, meaning that so many good looking games, but I'm not sure if necessarily there's that many more good playing games.
No, I don't think so.
No, I just think that there's a lot more product out there that looks nice.
There's a lot more chaff to get through.
There really is. Yeah. And so it's really hard to get through, get to, you know, really good quality games these days. So, I mean, I don't know. What do you think as far as how is that going to continue? Do you think that's going to get worse? Are we reaching some sort of critical mass where we're not going to produce as much? And I'm talking mainly about the big game companies, the main, you know, the Z-Mans, the Fantasy Flights, the Days of Wonder, you know.
I think they're fine. I think they're not producing inordinate more volume than they were 3-4 years ago.
Okay.
You know, I'm waiting to get on part two of the topic.
Okay, well, let's just go launch into it there. So, you know, so we're Kickstarter.
Yes,
go ahead.
I think that's, I don't want to say a problem because it's really produced some good things. Uh-huh. It really has done some good things, but
we're going to talk about chaff.
Man, there's just, I mean, it's perfect for board games because in like the promo crazed board gamer sort of a thing, you know, it's like, oh, but you know, yeah, you can get this game in a year when we print it, but. But, you know, you can get this promo or this t-shirt or this coffee mug or something. You know, you throw one of these goofy things and people jump on it. And in the few Kickstarter things that I've been involved with, there's always some sort of delay. Like, it's always longer than they
anticipate,
you know. It's annoying for me because I know in the best of intentions, it's all about, you know, I know how Kickstarter started with the idea of, you know, hey, you're someone's presenting an idea and you're kind of voting with your dollar. It's
grassroots.
You're investing in it. That is great. But, you know, more and more, and we talked about this in the Kickstarter episode, it's just become kind of a fancy pre-order system. And I don't know. I found the projects I've done, my money just ends up getting tied up for much longer than I care for it to be. And, you know, the Kickstarter is under no... They've already got their money, so they don't care whether it's on time or not.
Right.
And, you know, in a way, that's how the game company is, too. You know, the Castles and Crusades thing I mentioned months and months ago, good bundle, good price, I still think it is. It's 2 months behind schedule and still and kind of languishing.
Right.
And a lot of it is just things they could send out, you know, product they already have, because a lot of the bundle was things they've already printed, but they're waiting until everything is ready so they can send it out at once, and now it's 2 months behind, and they don't care.
Well, it's sort of bypassing, this doesn't need to turn into another Kickstarter episode, but it's sort of bypassing the quality control that's inherent in any small business that starts up.
Right.
That, you know, you have your business, they raise some money, you know, maybe they have some venture capital or they get a loan or something like that to get started and produce that first game or whatever, you know, like a Days of Wonder did, or like a, you know, any of these other companies that have started off with just one game or two games. And then, you know, the market then tells you, did you do a good job or not? Did you produce a good game? You know, did you produce enough copies of it? All that kind of stuff. And then from there, you sort of build upon that and, you know, then you end up being a Fantasy Flight games, you know, whereas when stuff from them comes out, I know they're not everything that they put out is perfect and they've had a couple of misses as far as, you know, rules and some other things with quality. But in general, if a game comes out from Fantasy Flight, I don't think I'm going to open it up and say and give it a 2 out of 10 rating. I think it's really unlikely because they've got built-in quality control. They've got in-house designers. They've got a lot of infrastructure in place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's been a slow build over time, whereas just kind of throwing money at a group of people or a person who is not established, you know, and is not proven – is risky, you know.
It's just such a double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm.
Because on one hand, you know, maybe that old model was stifling some really good talent, some really good ideas that, you know, they just could never get the money together or whatever. And that's great. But then the other side, you know, the other edge of that sword is that, you know, just anyone could be like, I got an idea. And they throw it up there and, you know, maybe they raised $8,000 and they get this game published and it sucks. And, you know, I don't know. I go back and forth on it because I think the idea is cool, but there's just so much chaff to get through to get to the wheat. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's definitely something new that's propped up in the last couple of years.
Yeah. So that's kind of a look at board games. I mean, I would say that the companies that that we enjoyed a few years ago, you know, Days of Wonder, Fantasy Flight, I enjoy quite a few things from Mayfair and Rio Grande. You know, I think those companies are still going strong. You know,
yeah.
I think that they're still putting out good. Z-Man Games, I think they just recently, you know, got bought by Philosophia, a Canadian publisher. But I find that they're a company that takes a little bit more risk. You know, on new designers and, you know, throw a little bit of money behind getting a game published that, you know, maybe something like a Fantasy Flight wouldn't produce, you know. So I think they're a little bit more hit and miss sometimes. But they've also, you know, gotten some really great ones out there too. So so I'd like to see, hopefully we'll see more good games from those companies. And, you know, I'd love to see in the next few years the rise of another big game company, you know, that puts out really great stuff. So get right on that, gamers.
Do it.
Let's switch gears for a second here and let's talk about RPGs.
Hey, you're looking at me. The biggest thing I think in the last 3 to 4 years is that the thing people never thought would happen is that Wizards let D&D fall off the top spot for fantasy RPGs. I mean, everyone just assumed, you know, forever and ever, amen, that was going to be the number one thing. And due to an okay rule set, I still think 4E was fine. But just the way they've handled things, and now they've announced a new edition, and there's just been turnover. It seems like every 2 years they have a big staff turnover. You know, they try to go for new gamers, they try to go for retro gamers, and they're just trying all these things and missing. You know, Pathfinder has come up and taken their spot, and even with this new edition on the horizon, Pathfinder seems pretty locked into that number one spot, at least for the next year or so. And just the fact that D&D is no longer the number one fantasy role-playing thing, I think that's a big deal.
I mean,
because even during its most troubled times, you know, when it was going through some of the dark times of, like, second edition, it still was the number one RPG overall. And, you know, for them to give it up, that's a monumental screw-up. And if 5E doesn't take, then I don't know what's going to happen. Hasbro could sell the brand off because Magic's doing fine for them in the money department for Wizards. You know, at some point they could just sell the D&D name for buku amount of money.
Yeah,
and go from there. So I don't know. Just kind of WotC's ineptness on the D&D brand has probably been the biggest RPG thing in my mind.
Yeah, that's been a huge one. The advent of Pathfinder and its rise has been a huge thing in the last few years. Fantasy Flight's put out quite a few RPGs, and there's still a huge preponderance of independent RPGs.
Yeah,
I think that this is really a great playground for independent writers and story creators. You know, it's almost, I think, easier to break into this than it would be into board games. You know?
Yeah, this is where I think the grassroots thing's a little better.
Yeah.
Because really all you have to do is put together a PDF. And
yeah.
You put it on DriveThruRPG, you charge $2.99 for it, and you see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, you don't have long waiting times, you know, people investing tons of money into it. It's quick, and the people decide if they like it or not.
Yeah, and I think that's the flexibility of RPGs makes that so much fun because, you know, I can't tell you the number of times that you and I have been sitting around, especially you, Cody, since you're more of a game master, and just thought about, you know, I'd love to run a game that does this. Or I've sat in groups of people that, you know, that are game masters saying, you know, I was thinking about trying to run this game that was kind of like this, but did this, but had this idea to it. And it's so easy to do that. And really, because it's so easy to do that, a lot of people have already come out with, like you said, PDFs or just small adventures or modules for so many different kinds of things that the sandboxes, there's still plenty of room there, you know, and it's a low overhead to be able just to write something out, do some illustrations, and to get something out there on the market. I think that's really a cool thing about RPGs is it's still so much in the realm of imagination, and there's so little that has to happen to get from imagination to execution. Whereas in board games, card games, definitely miniatures games, going from imagination to execution, much more costly and time consuming. So overall health of RPGs, I just ask that question. You know, you mentioned D&D, but if you compare it to, you know, 5 years ago to now, you know, are RPGs in decline? Are they on the rise? Are they peaking? Where are we at?
I think we're about the same.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say about the same. There have been efforts, you know, like beginner box, you know, Paizo finally put out a beginner box for Pathfinder, and there's other, you know, new products out there, the Mouse Guard box set. But I think for every success, there maybe have been a stumble, and I think the next few years are going to be rather telling. I think the bigger problem is, you know, print versus digital. You know, we were talking about our iPads earlier and tablets and readers and things like that. You know, the print section of RPGs are just, you know, going down and down and down. And now publishers really have to decide how much they want to rely on a digital model versus a print model. So that'll be interesting to see, I think.
Well, interesting that you mentioned that. Let's talk about this for a second. Is I don't think we can talk about the last few years in gaming without mentioning electronics, you know, and iOS and the iPhone, iPod, iPad, and a lot of the other tablet things that have come out, and Android. And what that is doing to gaming. I think we've had an episode, you know, in the past where we sort of talked a little bit more about that. But, you know, I think that's been something we've definitely seen in the last few years that, you know, if you go back to episode one of our show, I'm not sure if we would have even mentioned anything about electronic games, you know, and that was just 3.5 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, I think even a year ago, I would have just shook my head at playing any board game on an iPad or other device. Just being like, no, I'd pretty much always rather play the real thing. And yeah. And even today, yeah, most of the time I'd rather just prefer to play the real thing. But, you know, there are a few games, you know, I just played a game of Ascension on my iPhone. And yeah. Ascension, I'd rather play digitally. And I was almost scared to say that a year ago just because, you know, I didn't want to contribute to the death of the hobby that everyone says that electronics are going to be. But, you know, there are just some games I would prefer to play on a device, you know, through the ages. I may not prefer to play it on the device, but I'll play it more.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if we can play, you know, a game of Through the Ages on an iPad and we just, you know, it's asynchronous turns, we just take our turns whenever, it's like, that'd be fantastic. We'd play 2, 3, 4 times as much, I think.
Yeah. And I think when this discussion about digital games first came up, it was, you know, when the iPod Touch and the iPhone first came out. And I'll have to admit that, you know, those, when I think of those kind of devices, I think of more things like Angry Birds, you know, the little things that you're doing just to occupy your time. You know, you're waiting in line at a store or something like that. And maybe you play these little puzzly games, things like that. But I never really thought about using a device like that for a board game or something more extensive because it's just like, man, the screen's so small. But man, in 2010, when the iPad came out, I felt like that really has opened the door up to some really interesting possibilities with board games. And I was not the first, you know, I was not one of the first people to say that I was excited about this, but now that I'm, you know, I'm going to be getting a new iPad, and I'm actually, one of the reasons I'm getting it is I'm very interested in seeing what kind of board game applications are going to be out there. I think Cody and I saw somewhere that they're going to be making a version of Eclipse for iPad, and I think that will be very cool. So any of those games that require a lot of fiddly pieces or math and calculations, whenever a game can do that for you, I think that's really pretty cool. I really like the new version, the iOS version of Elder Sign.
Mm-hmm.
I think I even like that better than the and I like dice, but I think I like it better than the physical game.
And to offset, you know, because a lot of people, some people may be saying, you know, it's like, oh, you know, it's the death of board games. It's, you know, everyone's just going to be playing on, you know, displays. Days of Wonder has said that in the couple months since their Ticket to Ride apps have been on iPhone and iPad and all that,
mm-hmm.
They've seen a big surge in sales of the board game.
Oh, uh-huh.
I mean, because that's something that, you know, the sky's not falling. There's something about getting around and playing with physical pieces, and, you know, a board's never going to go out of date or never be obsolete. You know, you're always going to have it. And, You know, I think they need to work as a partnership, but they're not necessarily working against each other.
Yeah, and I could see that for me too. That if they come out with board game applications that I could try out on an iPad, I could see that pushing me to then get the physical copy of the game. Yeah. You know, and not necessarily just in the other direction. So, I think it's a good thing. It'll be real interesting in the next 5 years to see what exactly is going to happen with that. You know, nope. I think we'll see some, I think we're going to see some innovation in that it will be surprising as to how that can interact, with board game stuff. So, and like you said, the RPGs being able to have all that stuff on PDF now that, you know, folks can have an entire library of RPG material right there on an iPad. Right.
Yep.
And so, you know, if we ever get to the point, you know, 5-10 years down the road where it's a norm to have this kind of device. And I think that's where we're going too. I really feel like, especially when I think of things like college students, you know, when they go to class, instead of having to go down to the university bookstore and buy a bunch of books, you know, I think we're not too many years away from every student just having an iPad or some device like that. It just has all their books on it. They just download them and they're good to go. And I think it's the same thing with like RPGs and games like that. You know, we may not have bookshelves full of gaming books anymore. It might just be one device.
The future, man.
Yeah, man, it's
catch
cool.
It.
one other thing I want to talk about, conventions. We are big fans of Gen Con, with our home convention here in the gaming capital of the world. We've been to Origins. I've been to BGG Con, you know, local cons, things like that. You know, I got PAX Prime, PAX East. What's your opinion on what's happened with conventions? Are they on the rise, on the decline? Where are we with conventions?
I tell you, Gen Con's to be commended, because, man, they were on death's door.
Yeah.
They were on death's door close to when we started the show, or...
I think then, or yeah, I want to say right about then.
Right around there. You know, they had filed for bankruptcy, and there had been attempts at, like, hostile takeovers, and...
Yeah.
You know, it was... A lot of people said, you know, they're done. Yeah, and
there's issues with Lucasfilm and the whole thing with the Star Wars celebration. Their Gen Con SoCal in California was a flop.
Yeah, in a way, I think it was good for Gen Con. As funny as it is to say, because they focused on their core element, their main con, and they've really built it back up, and now it's bigger and better than ever. You know, you've got the new convention center additions in Indy. Gen Con, it just seems like it's a freight train, just growing and growing and growing.
Last year was fantastic. Yeah, I mean, it was so noticeable how many more people were there. It was cool.
So Gen Con, I think, is doing great. I think Origins is heading the other way.
It seems that way.
I think just with their date changes and some just questionable moves, I don't know if they're going to be on the map much longer, to be honest. I mean, we said that about Gen Con, but, I mean, Origins just, they just keep making dumb move after dumb move. It's like, you know, they're trying to get away from Gen Con. They're trying to move earlier in the year, but they alienate, you know, a fourth of their attendance by doing that. You know, a lot of people are still in school then, so.
I think BGG Con, which I didn't get a chance to go to last year, so I don't really know how exactly it went. I know they're getting ready to move into a different facility, which I think might be able to accommodate more people. That convention, I think they have to be real careful to continue to keep a cap on that. I think, you know, when that kind of a convention becomes a 2,000-4,000 person convention, I think that stops being fun. I think it really needs to have to maintain that open gaming environment. You got to cap that at like 1,000-1,500 at the most, which is, I think, about where their cap was this year. So I'll be interested to see how that continues. But it seems like it's very popular. It sells out very quickly every year, and they did a real good job the year that I went there to BGG Con. So
it's been interesting to see how the two PAXs have been doing. I mean, they sell out, and you know, they have events from video games to board games to concerts to everything in between. I'd like to go. I think it would be interesting just to go in as attendee and take that all in. But you know, that's we say that's a different crowd, but in some ways it's not, because a lot of them are getting turned on to board games and you know, things like Small World. You know, Will Wheaton mentioned Small World, but now, you know, that's getting people into the hobby, so I guess it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, lay off Will Wheaton, Cody.
No, I don't like Will Wheaton. But you know, it is good to see people getting into the hobby.
Yeah, it is.
Through conventions like that. So the people I've talked to that have been to PAX Prime or PAX East, they say it's very good. They've had good things to say. So I don't think that'll ever be in competition with Gen Con.
And no.
I know they draw about the same. PAX probably draws even a bit more, I bet. But it just seems like they're on different turfs, you know.
Yeah.
It's like Gen Con's doing its thing, PAX is doing its thing. They don't really need to compete. Gen Con's done better since they've gotten rid of the video game stuff, I think. I think they've gotten a lot better.
Yep.
And, you know, I think they can grow together, and they don't really steal attendees from the other. They're pretty far away on the calendar, so.
And geographically, too.
And geographically, that's right. So,
all right. So, yeah. Convention's still doing good. Still, mm-hmm. I still look forward to it. That's one of my favorite times of the year is Gen Con. Oh, so. Yeah. So, just to wrap things up, just overall, you know, we talked about the different segments here. You know, I feel like our hobby is still very healthy.
And the state of our hobby is strong.
Fundamentally strong.
It's fundamentally strong. Jed Bartlett.
That's right. And I feel like that's kind of a theme this episode.
It is.
Bartlett, yeah. You know, I really feel like it's still growing and there's still a lot of things to be created and to be done. I think that we're getting more and more gamers that are into this hobby gaming, thing that we do. And, you know, I think that the outlook is positive. I don't think we're in decline here.
No. And I wonder how cyclical things will be, because I wonder if, like, and I'm not trying to beat the topic of Kickstarter and those things, but I wonder if that will reach such a critical mass that it just comes back around again, and where we see a period where there's not a lot, like the volume goes down for a while and there's not a lot of these upstart projects coming around, and then maybe it slowly grows. I mean, that how it is with everything. There's nothing new under the sun. I mean, I think it's just going to get to this point and then just come crashing down and then build its way up again.
So. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see when we get to that point. So,
hopefully soon.
All right, so that's our look at the state of the hobby. And speaking of nothing that has to do with the state of the hobby, want to do?
I was gonna see how you twisted that into ninjas.
No, I can't. Yeah, I can't do it.
Very good.
I can't do it.
Fantastic.
It's the Green Machine, gonna rock the town without being seen. Have you ever seen a turtle get down? Slamming and jamming to the new swing sound. Yeah, everybody let's move. Vanilla is here with a new jack groove. Gonna rock and roll the place with the power of the Ninja Turtle bass. Iceman, you know I'm not playing. Devastate the show what the turtles are saying.
Ninja, ninja, rap. Ninja, ninja, rap. Ninja, ninja, rap.
Ninjas. Not a lot of lead-in you can do with ninjas. I'm more of a pirate guy.
Yeah, well, I'm a ninja guy, really.
You're a ninja
yeah.
guy. Then you are the best person to talk about Ninjato, which is our Biochariot and I. So preach your ninja gospel.
Okay. Ninjato. It's a new game from Z-Man Games. Also in correlation, in accordance with Crosscut Games. And this is a game that is designed by Dan Schnocke and A.B. West, which is Adam West. And these are actually two guys that are locals to Indianapolis. And they both, the full disclaimer here, they both attend our game on, or have attended our game on game night and our game on game days. And they're just a couple of really great guys. It's really cool to have them local. And they have also helped to produce the game Galactic Emperor. You might have heard of that game, sort of a space exploration and conquest game. It came out a few years ago. And this is their new one. And this has been produced by Z-Man Games. And let me tell you a little bit about it. It's for 2 to 4 players. It's kind of a, what would you say, Cody? I'd say it's kind of a worker placement game.
Yeah, it's worker placement. You summed it up the best. Like when you were unpacking, you said this is Stone Age and Ink and Gold. I'm like, no,
these two things don't go together, yeah. but they kind of do in this case. And so in this game, the theme is that you are. Basically, the invisible swords of the ruling families. You're the Ninjato. And there's these three different clans that are vying for power. Well, it's two clans and the emperor, I guess. But and in this game, you're going to be sending out your ninjas to go and try to steal things from the houses of these different different clans, and you're trying to steal items and to dishonor their houses by stealing all of their stuff. You can use the things that you've stolen to then you can purchase rumors. These are cards that they're going to be in the game. Rumors that might be able to get you points. You can also purchase, like, you can bribe envoys to sort of be on your side. And ultimately it's a victory point game. And there's some very interesting ways that you can get points in the game. So the one thing I'll go ahead and start off by saying is that I think that the components in this game are just beautiful. The board is just very, very pretty, and all of the things, the little pieces and bits that you get in the game, I think are really high quality. The coolest bit being the wooden shuriken or ninja throwing stars that you get in the game that mark the actions that you're taking. So everybody gets three of those, and that's going to be how you're going to place those on the board to take your actions during the game. And so the idea is that you're on your turn, you are going to do one of these few things on the board. You'll place your shuriken there, and you'll get to do certain things. Everything else is sort of governed by cards in the game. You have cards that are called dojo cards that have numbers on them. And these are the numbers that you're going to be using to fight against the guards in these houses. Each of the five houses that are on the board basically has starts off with a house symbol of some kind that shows a particular clan. Like it'll be a blue little flower that shows that it's the blue clan. And then you'll have these little tokens that you've pulled out of a bag that represent treasures. And then there'll be a card that represents the guard that's a sentry post that is guarding that particular house. And so one of the things that you can do on your turn is you can say, I'm going to go in and steal a treasure out of this house. I'm going to try to steal all the treasures possibly. And you can you have to make a choice at this point whether you want to go in with stealth or strength. So you can either try to overpower the guard or you can sneak by him. It's all governed by cards. On the sentry's card, he's going to have a number that represents sort of his strength or his ability, one number. And if you go the strength route, then in order to defeat him, you have to play a card out of your hand that is greater than that number. If you go the stealth route, where you're sneaking by him, you have to play a card that's a number that is lower than the guard's number. Ties never win. Cody, do ties win?
They never win.
There you go.
That was a little disturbing for me.
You didn't like that?
No.
Ties, you lose.
I didn't grasp that for most of the game. So some things is like, all right, I got that. No, I don't.
No, you got it.
I do not have this at all.
So once you go in and you play that card and you say, I'm defeating this guard with, it's a three and I'm playing a four. Okay. So then there's going to be three little treasure tokens that represent the treasure in the house. You'll take the lowest value token and you place it on top of your little ninja star. And that shows that what you've stolen. So now you have a choice you can make. And this is sort of the ink and gold style part of the game. The push your luck element is you can either leave and take the treasures that you've already taken, or you can push your luck and you can say,
Banzai!
Banzai, very good.
Thank you.
And in which case you will basically go and face the next guard who's guarding the next piece of treasure. And there's a deck of cards there. You'll pull the next guard and you'll see, who you end up with. And you might end up with someone that you can handle or maybe not, you have to sort of gauge by the cards in your hand, can I defeat this guard or not? If you call Banzai, then you can play a card that will beat that guard. You'll play that card and then you'll get the next treasure. And you can continue on in this fashion until you've cleared out all the treasure in the room or in the house. But if you call Banzai and you aren't able to play a card that defeats that one, then you are considered to have failed, in which case you have to leave the house and you run out of there, basically, and you can only take one treasure that you've collected. If you've already gone through three guards and you got three treasures and then you couldn't defeat the last one or the fourth one, then you've got to put back all the treasure except for one. And so so that's sort of the push your luck element of it. In addition, when you turn over a guard card after the first one, if the number that's on there is red and it has a little symbol with a gong on it, then that's said to have sounded the alarm. It's like an alarm guard, in which case at that point, you're going to pull one more treasure out of the bag and put one more treasure into the house there. And then whatever the highest number treasure is, you're going to turn that one over to a red side. So now that particular highest value treasure is being guarded by a red elite guard. And that'll be like the kind of the boss of the house now that you're going to have to face if you want to get that last treasure. Because what you're trying to do here is you want to get those treasure tokens because they're going to be worth points later and also worth, you'll be able to use those to buy things that you need. In addition, if you're able to completely clear out a house by defeating all of the guards, then you can, you're said to have dishonored the house and you can change the color of that house from one color to another. So this is sort of an indirect way that you can influence things because later on in the game, when we get to the scoring section, you very possibly might, want a particular color to have a majority of the points. You might be really strong in blue, and so you want all of the houses, or as many as possible, to be blue. So you might want to go into a red or a green house, try to clear it out, and then change it over to blue so you can get the points for that later on. So I think that's kind of a cool mechanic. And so that's sort of how that works. And you have that elite guard there, which will also get you points if you defeat the elite guard. And so that's one thing you can do on your turn, is to sort of try to attack these houses and get treasures. Like I said, you're going to be using these cards to defeat the different guards. And you're going to start off with four of those. And if you place your ninja star onto the dojo, then that's the way that you're going to get more cards. And you'll just place your star there, and you'll pretty much get, you're always going to have at least four cards. So if you have zero cards in your hand, you'll draw four. If you have one card, you'll draw three. If you have two or more, then you'll draw two cards. And so that's the way that you get cards in the game. There's also an area called the Sensei, which is going to allow you to get different ninja skills that will help you when you go into the houses. And there's a whole bunch of different ones that'll come out, and you'll put in
accounting, that's interpersonal right. relationships.
Interpersonal relationships, yeah. Conflict, caring conflict. So, and these will be different kinds of martial arts. There's like the crane and the tiger and the snake. And all you have to do is place your ninja star there, and then you have to discard a certain card that's listed on the little token for the skill. And then you can take that skill. These are like thick cardboard tokens that will sit down in front of you. And these are things that will allow you to perhaps add +2 or -2 to a card. They modify cards. Lots of different special abilities that you can do here. So this will help you when you go into those particular houses to be able to be more versatile and not be bound by all the just the cards that you have. So that's the Sensei. Then the other places on the board that you can go is there's the place where you go to where the envoys are, and then there's a place called the Pavilion, which Cody dubbed, what do you call it?
Rumor Town.
Rumor Town. So we'll start
with the mayor of Rumor Town.
You were indeed. So the Pavilion is where you can get these things called rumor cards. And what these are, if you ever played Stone Age, they work similarly to the way the cards in Stone Age work that you're collecting, is that you get... As you buy more and more of these, you'll get benefits for having more of them. So it might say that, if you have three of a particular kind of card, then that means that every green card that you have, you'll multiply that by three, and then you'll get that number of points. So it's kind of a mathematical thing. Collecting sets of these cards will cause the things that you score to be more valuable. And so you just want to try to collect sets of these things throughout the course of the game. And you're kind of keeping it secret, so it's not revealed until the end as to what you have collected. So you can go to the Pavilion, and you can use your treasures that you purchased. Or that you didn't purchase them, you stole them. You can use the treasures to turn those in to buy the different Pavilion cards, the rumor cards. And then at the time when you do that, that's when you're going to score the points from those treasures that you stole. And so you can sort of be picky about which treasures you want to sell to try to maximize your points. On the other side of the board, there's the envoys. And the envoys are going to be people that you're kind of bribing to be on your side. And so, there's three different colors, of course, in the game, green, red, and blue. And then there's people on these cards that are all of different ages. And so there's a number on the card that represents their age. And so you want to have those cards in front of you, because when we get to the scoring rounds, how you score those particular colors is going to be based upon the number of envoys that you have, and then as a tiebreaker, who has the older envoy. So you want to start to kind of collect those. Because I said earlier, you can manipulate which houses control which factions or which families control which houses, and that will help you when you get to the scoring part. So you can buy or bribe envoys there. So those are basically the main things that you can – places where you can put your ninja throwing stars during the game. And so you'll go back and forth around the table, and everybody will place one and do their action. And they'll keep going until everyone has already placed all of their actions. And then three times during the game, you're going to do this 7 times. And after the 3rd, 5th, and 7th round, you're going to have a scoring round. And this is where basically you're going to look at those envoy cards and see who has the most blue envoys, who has the most green, who has the most red. And then whoever is in first place will get to choose between either getting a rumor card, or they can choose to take the points that are on the board based upon the house tokens. So you look at those 5 houses and see, well, how many blue houses are there? Okay, well, what are all the points that are on those? Because they're different values. You can either take those points or you can take a card. then the second place person in that color will get to do the other thing. So if the first place person took the points, second place person has to take a rumor card and vice versa. And so this is sort of the way that you're going to want to manipulate the points, is that you want to, if you have a lot of blue envoys, then you're going to want to send your ninjas into the houses to try to turn them into blue houses so that you'll get more points for those. So I like the sort of indirect way that those things work together to be able to get points. So like I said, the scoring is at the end of the third, fifth, and seventh round. And then at the end of that, then you add up all of your points. And so most of the points that you're going to be getting are for treasures that you've sold, and also for the, you know, during the scoring rounds, the points that are on the board there.
Is
and
that so?
I knew you'd say that. But then also you're going to turn over all of those rumor cards, and you're going to calculate out your points based upon the rumor cards that you have. And as we found in the game that Cody and I played, I thought that I had completely crushed him because I think I had all of the houses in blue, and I had all of the more blue envoys than he did. And so I was scoring huge points every scoring round for having all of these blue houses. But at the very end, Cody had spent the whole game in Rumor Town buying rumor cards, and he had come up with these sets of cards that I think gave him, I want to say 80 or 90, no, it was more than that, it was over 100 points mm-hmm. worth of cards at the end, and he ended up beating me by 2 or 3 points.
Yeah, I don't count the victory because there at the end, John gave me some pity points.
I did. I converted a house, and I instead of giving him like 2 points, I gave him 8, mm-hmm. you know, and because I thought I was not only had won, but had completely crushed him, and yep. It was shame on me.
Rumor Town,
a place to be, right?
Powerful.
So that's kind of the way Ninjato works. It's, you know, it's got worker placement elements to it. It's got kind of a push your luck element with the defeating of the guards. I think it's got a great theme. I think the theme makes a lot of sense, and I think it really matches up with what you're doing, even though it's a Euro-ish sort of mechanic, mm-hmm. I guess. But Cody, why don't you tell our listeners, the 5 or 6 that are still listening to this mm-hmm. show at this point in the final five, and tell them how we rate our games here.
All right, listen up, pukes. All right, by Triad and I, we have 3 different, I guess, levels here. By being the parts of the game we really like and we think merit that you should go out and buy it right now. We have the try points, which may be good for some, not as good as others. And then we have deny points, which we think are terrible, loathsome things about the game that we would not recommend even to your worst enemy.
Right. So why don't you start off with buy points for Ninjato?
Boom. Like you said, I think it's a wonderfully packaged game. I think everything, the design of it, the components, it's just a very polished and very solid game. And I think that continues when you play it. I was pretty skeptical. John said over and over, oh, you got to try this game. I'm like, yeah, okay. You know, I'm not a big ninja guy. We'll see how it works. But it's exactly like he said. It was a mix of Stone Age and ink and gold in an attractive package. And the theme did not feel completely pasted on or irrelevant like some other Euros. You know, mm-hmm. like Pillars of the Earth, you know, that's a great game, but the theme doesn't seem that, you know, intricately woven into it. This was really nice, and it felt like, you know, if you're going the stealth path or the strength path, you know, that was an interesting twist. I liked that it plays in a short amount of time. You know, it feels like for the length that you play it, the weight is perfect. Not too light, not too heavy. It's right in that comfort zone for about an hour, maybe an hour and a half with multiple players. You know, I generally do like worker placement games, but they have to have some sort of a twist, and I think the twists in this one really make it stand out. So those are my buy points.
I agree with Cody about the production of the game. I think everything is just beautifully done and very themey. The artwork is really cool. Like all the envoy cards have these great, you know, pictures of this sort of feudal Japan, Japanese people, and pictures of ninjas and samurai and that kind of stuff. And so I think that's all very, very well done. You know, the ninja throwing stars are just really cool. And the board itself, just beautiful, beautiful artwork on the board. And it's kind of a darker board, so it seems like it's, you know, like you're sneaking around at night, mm-hmm. and that's really cool. I think, like Cody said, it's a great balance of weight and time. You know, that it's not too heavy, it's not too light, it's not too long, it's not too short. You know, it's like you kind of want your light games to be short and your heavy games to be long, and this one fits right in the center there. That you got to think about what you're doing. There is definitely strategy involved. I think the box says ages 12 and up, and I think that probably is younger players, I think, could play this, but I think to really get the strategy and the balance of what you're trying to do, I think that's about probably about the right age. And so yeah, I really enjoy the gameplay a lot, and the speed of it I thought was just really well done. Try points.
Well, like you mentioned, it does have a bit of an emergent strategy, so I think a few early games could be kind of not frustrating, but I mean there are a lot of ways to win and a lot of ways to go about it, and I think. I know some people get turned off when they, you know, can't develop their winning strategy right out of the gate, but that's really the only thing I can think of is that, you know, there's a lot of ways to do what you need to do, and you have, you know, like any good worker placement game, you have too few workers to get the job done. So,
yeah,
you know, there's a lot of thinking and expanding in there.
Yeah, because there's only three actions per round. So really, if you count it out, there's only 21 actions you're taking in the entire game.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are lots of things that you can do. So you have to really pick and choose when you're going to go in those houses to fight, when to get cards, things like that. So I think that the one thing, and we sort of saw it in our just quick two-player game that we played of this, is that I think the luck element could irritate some people, you know, that ink and goldish element there.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, if you go in and you think you have a good hand of cards, and then all of a sudden the guards that come up just happen to be the ones, like you went into sneak and the guards that came in just happen to be the ones that were good at sneaking. And then the next person comes into the same house and different guards come up and, you know, that are better for
them. They're blind and deaf and
yeah.
In a wheelchair and they can't really do anything for you.
So I you know, I think we experienced that a couple times where I think Cody went in and he just got kind of destroyed by these guards, and I went into the same house and I completely obliterated it really easily with not much of a better hand of cards. And so I think that folks who don't like luck elements to games and really want, you know, it to be just strategic and just predictable in that fashion, they're not going to like that part of the game, I don't think. I think it's really cool. I think it's kind of themey too, because every time
there's not even that much luck. It's just people who prefer zero luck.
You know,
a Kayla style sort of thing.
I like it because it felt cinematic to me. Oh, like, yeah. especially in the rule book, it actually says to say bonsai, you know. But you sort of get the impression of like Jackie Chan going through or Bruce Lee or something. Goes up to the first guard, you know, fights him, and then he goes up, and the next guard pops out, you know. Mm-hmm. And I just got that sort of feel as we were playing that part of it. I think the only other thing is I played this game three players and two players. And I think with two players, one thing I noticed was that we went the entire game until the very last scoring, and we didn't have any of the green envoys come up in the on the envoy cards there. So I don't know if that was due to number of players or if it was just a bad shuffle of the cards, something like that. But
you can tell it plays better with more. I mean, we had a good experience with two, but I think this game really would have been cool with three or four.
Yeah, it's different. I don't think it's worse, but I think it does definitely play different because you always know that you're going to get something in that, you know, in that scoring. Because, you know, first place and second place, if it was only two players, you know you're going to get something. If it's a three or four player game, then you have the possibility of not getting anything in a scoring, and you definitely don't want to be in that position. So you might make different decisions because of that. But those are really only try points. Deny points?
What's this game retail for?
Ooh, good question.
50? I think it's 50.
I should know because I bought it from Myriad. Probably 50? Yeah.
I think it's 50. I have no deny points.
Okay.
And yeah. I think that's a solid price. I'm always the grump who thinks everything's overpriced. I think that's a fair price.
Yeah, I don't have any deny points either. This is really one of the most beautiful games
of
2011.
Yeah. I expected nothing from this. I really want to play it again.
Oh, good. I'm glad because I bought it. I didn't even game share this guy. I played it at IndieCon, and I knew that I wanted to buy it. It's a really, really good game. Hats off to our buddies Adam and Dan for making a really fantastic game, and we encourage you to check it out and possibly pick it up if you're interested in it. That's Ninjato
Banzai! Well, that wraps up another stealth-oriented episode.
really?
That went downhill very fast. This wraps up another ninja episode.
You know, we only got a couple more shots at this.
Yeah, I know. I really got to bring my A-game.
Yeah, you got to bring your A-game next time. Hey, before we go, I wanted to mention something that I just received in the mail recently that I wanted to talk about. It turns out there's a user on BoardGameGeek, and he makes fully painted like cast plastic miniatures for the War of the Ring game. And, you know, I think I mentioned the last couple episodes that I bought the second edition of War of the Ring. We haven't gotten into the table yet, but it will be soon. And, I had one of the listeners of our show, he sent me a Geek Mail on Board Game Geek and said, hey, there's a guy on Board Game Geek who makes these really great miniature, and they're like, you know, miniature strongholds, and he makes a miniature Mount Doom.
It's cool looking.
That they're supposed to go along with your game, and you might want to contact him. And I said, oh, I that sounds cool. I might do that. And then he contacted me the next day, and his username is it's Fubar AWOL. It's FUBAR space AWOL. And so he sent me an email saying that he would be happy to send me one of the Mount Dooms to check out and see if it would work with my game. And like I said, I haven't gotten to the game to the table yet, but I did get the Mount Doom, and oh my goodness, it is amazing. It is, you know,
it's cool.
it's really, really well done. I mean, and I'm not sure what old Fubar and his wife Fubet, as he says, I'm not sure, you know, what their production, how exactly that works, but it is of great professional quality here. This isn't like, this doesn't look like something someone just made in their basement or whatever. I mean, it really looks super high quality, painted up really nicely. You know, it's got the little spots for the Fellowship to walk up Mount Doom, like in the game there. And really, really cool. I can't wait to play the game and to add that to it. And they also, you know, make not just Mount Doom, but they make like 16 other figures that represent the strongholds in the game. And you haven't played War of the Ring, but there's like
strongholds. No, I've seen the pictures on Board Game Geek though. Okay. Like I saw their version of Minas Tirith.
And oh yeah,
it's like if I get this game, I'm probably going to splurge and end up getting the whole set because it looks really nice.
Yeah, they've got like there's Helm's Deep is one. Uh-huh. They've got like the two towers and Lorien, and so they've got a whole bunch of them. So they've got, if you go and like look for Fubar AWOL and look for his pictures on Board Game Geek, you know, and if you're interested, he says just to send him an email about them, and he'd be happy to give you prices and that kind of stuff. But you know, he said I guess he originally sculpted these to fit the big collector's edition that went with the Fantasy Flight Games collector's edition, and which has an even bigger board, I think, than the second edition. But they've made some smaller additions that are for the first and second edition board. So these are miniatures. He says they also actually make a Mount Doom for the Lord of the Rings Kenitia cooperative game. So if you wanted to doll that guy up, you know, with a Mount Doom,
then, that I'm curious to see.
Yeah. So anyway, I think these are really cool. I'm very likely going to end up getting the entire set of these to sort of outfit the game. So if you like War of the Ring, if you have that either version of that game or even the Kinesia Cooperative game, go check out Fubar AWOL on Board Game Geek. Check his pictures out. And if you're interested, send him an email. Thanks so much for sending that to us to check out Fubar. We appreciate it, man. Okay, so are we done?
I think we're done.
That's episode 80.
Wow.
Wow, 80 episodes.
Now, if you're interested in getting your own copy of War of the Ring, for example,
oh, yeah,
you could do it with the $200 in Myriad money you could win by entering the last contest.
Absolutely.
The last contest of Cody and John.
The final frontier. Yeah,
that's
there.
Right. Yep. So send us or phone us your favorite moment from Game On, and you will be entered to win the Big Daddy $200 gift certificate from our good friends at Myriad Games.
That's right. Thanks to Myriad Games for that. Join us in a couple of weeks where we're going to be bringing you the fourth of the final five.
Oh, man.
We're getting down to it. We're going to be talking about a lot of other great gaming stuff. We'll have some reviews for you. We may even crack open the Game One inbox and answer some questions. We've got a few building up in there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're winding down, but we're still excited about making these last few shows for you. We, again, appreciate all of the positive feedback and well wishes we've gotten from everybody. And we still really enjoy making this podcast for you. And until next time,
Game On.
This episode of Game On is sponsored by Myriad Games, on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. If you'd like to contact Cody and John, send them an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 413-8-GAME-ON. For more content, check out our website at gameonpodcast.com. Join our guild on BoardGameGeek.com and connect with other fans of the show. Become a fan of our show on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Game On Podcast. Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. Check out other great shows on PulpGamer.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, Game On.
What are you thinking about?
Tomorrow.
Why don't we tell them about the final contest?
Yeah, go ahead. What? Are we doing music or something?
That's what I assume. This is where you do your magic.
Editing magic.
That's for you, Dare.
You happy now, Dare?
Also,